faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things Podcast. Hope you had a wonderful week. If there's one thing I hate, it's being bored. So if you bump into me around town, I'm going to have to take my earbuds out. I'm always listening to something while I'm doing the boring stuff, mainly shopping, making dinner, stuff like that. I'm listening to podcasts. So keep the Battleground America podcast in mind always when you're running your Saturday morning errands or your Sunday to-do list is getting knocked out Sunday afternoon. And please tell your friends and neighbors. Let's dive right in with Insane Thing number 4. The big takeaway this week, and really of the last month, has been that the Democrat Party and, quite frankly, China's shadow voter registration system, which facilitates mass fraud and is based on illegal immigrants and ghost voter registrations, is beginning to fall, folks, like the walls of Jericho. The walls of Jericho came down with a horn. In this case, X is bringing it down because the Uniparty can't hide it. Even back in 2020, before Elon Musk owned X, all the oddities, the irregularities, sometimes might even make it into the local news wherever they were going on, but they never could hit critical mass. They can now, as they reverberate across X. And what's becoming clearer and clearer is that the FBI, acting essentially as a voter fraud arm of the Democrat Party, has been covering this up to allow it to happen. Multiple devastating stories this week, coming from declassifications handed off to former The Hill reporter John Solomon, who now runs his own site called Just the News. The first one was at Maricopa County, Arizona. Arizona, a critical swing state, Maricopa County, the most important county in the swing state. The largest ever hacking of a board of elections in America by a single entity. One guy, 600,000 voter files. The FBI knew. CISA knew, and yet our intelligence agencies told us it was the cleanest election ever. Why wasn't he prosecuted? Great question. It's just the latest hacking or voter fraud operation to come to the attention of the FBI and then go poof. And that was just the beginning of the week. If you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, you know the story, and you know the fact that Trump has declassified the story. China and Iran hack our boards of elections, exfiltrate the internal information, and then China uses it to create fake driver's licenses that they then ship back into the U.S. It's been reported in the news we caught 19,000 of those licenses. Imagine how many we didn't catch coming back through Chicago O'Hare. That was Customs and Border Patrol. Cash Patel's been open about that for a long time. But what we're now learning about is the FBI's own internal assessment, declassified by Donald Trump just a few weeks ago. Here it is. Chinese government production and export of fraudulent U.S. driver's licenses to Chinese sympathizers in the United States in order to create tens of thousands of fraudulent mail-in votes for U.S. presidential candidate Joe Biden in late August of 2020. Date of information, August 2020. They buried it. They hid it. And they lied to Congress about it because Congress had asked for a briefing after it was reported that China was also hacking UK boards of elections. But the FBI said to Congress that it wasn't happening here. In other words, they lied. Well, I've got a stunning update to this story. John Solomon's received another batch of classified information. Here he is on the Benny Johnson podcast talking about
it. There is a case that was tried by the DOJ, not to conclusion, but it was tried in Michigan of a Chinese student voting in the election. Too bad, the vote's already in, it counted, and that Chinese student was spirited away.
He was.
Remarkably, even though we had seized his passport, visa, and we had him on lockdown, the Chinese government was able to engage in some type of Jason Bourne-level espionage to get that Chinaman back to China after committing a felony crime here in America. So if they are that willing, if the government of China is that willing to take that extraordinary step in order to parachute in to enemy territory and get one of theirs back, how widespread do you think this actually was? You know, that's just the one we caught. And then two, why don't more people know about that? that the Chinese government engaged in a hostage rescue of an illegal voter behind enemy lines.
Well, the reason we don't know more about it is because our intelligence community, in the end of Trump and throughout the entire Trump won and throughout the entirety of Biden administration, kept this stuff under lock and key. They hid it.
Okay, but why would China go to this level of trouble over one guy? Wouldn't they let him hang? I mean, you know, he'll do a few years in prison, no doubt, but they don't care about their people. They can't because of what he knew, because of his connections, because they were afraid we would flip him. That's why they came to get him, because he's part of a much bigger network. Now, take a listen to this as John Solomon ties it all together.
There's a moment where the driver's license intelligence, you know, they're going to be sending driver's licenses in because they're going to vote for Joe Biden. And the FBI, it meets the threshold for alerting the CIA and the NSA and all the other intelligence agencies, hey, act on this. The FBI calls it back and orders that intelligence to be destroyed. They engaged in a cover-up. They kept our own country's intelligence services from defending us. We don't have an answer why such malicious actions were taken, why things that were clear and present dangerous to the election system were kept covered up, and in some cases ordered recalled. We see some indications of the politics. They don't like Trump. We got that. We have admissions. They were running I think as the FBI supervisor at the time wrote, a shadow government to keep the secret. But that six-year effort to keep it secret until Donald Trump finally put the key in the lock and unlocked this box of documents kept us from finding out what did China really do. How many more people are there like this that voted or sent licenses in? We were flying blind for 6 years because the Biden intelligence apparatus, and quite frankly, the end of Trump one's intelligence apparatus, made a conscious decision to cover this up. So we're still flying blind. We're just starting to get to it.
And then another stunning part. Do you remember when Joe Biden completely dismantled and discontinued our big Chinese intelligence operation here in America, smack in the middle of a little bit after, I should say, us finding out about those bioweapons labs when we faced so much danger? And I actually mentioned in the podcast, why on earth would you take down our intelligence defenses? And I'll tell you why. Because they were probably beginning to hit on the fact that China was helping the Democrat Party steal elections.
Remember, early on in the Biden administration, the Biden Justice Department ordered the Chris Wray FBI to shut down the FBI's premier Chinese counterintelligence program. It was called the China Initiative. They ordered it shut down at a time when China's threats to the United States were higher than ever before. That's when they're bringing in the pathogens, right? That's when we got the lab leak. This intelligence community lied about China's origins of the virus and the Wuhan lab, and they tried to cover up the voting irregularities or the voting efforts. They tried to cover up the China acquisition of the voter files. If our intelligence community is supposed to protect us, we have a pretty serious question. Why have they been hiding all this from the American public? And why is Donald Trump only the first president to unlock the key and let us see it? We're just starting to get active measures going again to find out why these things happen, how much of it happened. It's going to take us months to get there, I assume. But at least now, the people who are in the dark are in the know now. And it allows us to follow the roadmap and see how many more people. When you ask how many non-citizens or foreigners are in a position to vote in the election, the documents that we got declassified through the president last month give us an answer. In just 18 states that they looked at, less than half the country, they found 270,000 plus non-citizens who made it on the voter rolls. The Democrats immediately said, lie, not true. And their media friends said, lie, not true. And then New Jersey's governor came out and said, oh, no, it's true. I had 6,600 on my voter rolls, and 400 of them actually got to vote. 400 foreigners voted in New Jersey federal elections. Largest group we've ever seen in history. So the president's recent declassifications are already having a domino effect, but it'll take us 6 months to a year to figure out what China accomplished, what Venezuela accomplished, what the foreigners that got on voter rolls, did they vote in large numbers or just the 400 in New Jersey? But the good news is after 6 years of being kept in the dark, the process has begun. We've removed the veil. And now we can get to the bottom of the truth.
So I just want to maybe we shatter one myth of the 2020 election, which is that it was the most secure election in American history. It was perhaps the least secure election in American history. I'm sure you would contend, you would agree with that.
It certainly was a far less secure election than we were led to believe. We were given a sugar pill in December of 2020, and it wasn't true.
Which leads us to insane thing number three that broke over the weekend. Democrat Socialist of America leadership openly pledging allegiance to the Chinese Communist Party, folks. How are these people not under arrest for sedition? The CCP organized trips for members of the Democratic Socialists of America, which helped Zohran Mamdani's election campaign. I'm reading this in the Times of London. High-ranking activists for the left-wing group behind Zohran Mamdani's rise, and by the way, all the other candidates that are now dominating in the primaries, have backed a call to support the Chinese Communist Party. Here's Fox News.
The New York Post reporting, quote, members of Mamdani's DSA pledged to support and defend China. The pledge says, quote, survival of Chinese socialism is a crucial matter.
Support and defend Chinese Communist Party, Chinese socialism from who? We're the worst enemy. The United States of America. Folks, is it all coming together for you? The hundreds of millions of dollars New York Post has documented and Fox News has been documenting that have been pumped into Act Blue from billionaires associated with the Chinese Communist Party, the DSA pledging allegiance to the Chinese Communist Party, the New York Times reporting that the Chinese Communist Party is now deciding the primaries for the Democrat Party that are run in New York City, and the voter fraud operation. I've been saying it for more than a year on this podcast. The Chinese Communist Party and the Democrat Party are merging right before our eyes. By the way, in the Times of London article, they talked about the high-ranking members of the Democrat Socialists of America, again, the left-wing group behind Zohran Mamdani's rise, taking organized trips funded by the Chinese Communist Party to China, where they were, quote, treated like royalty. Well, we have a clip that's resurfaced from one of those trips. It's Democrat kingmaker Zohran Mamdani, who this week pushed Abdul El-Sayed across the finish line in Michigan. He's now the Democrat Party nominee for U.S. Senate. Horrors. When he was in China, and his Chinese minder, who's with the delegation, hands him a copy of Mao's Little Red Book, sayings by Mao, a guy who killed between 18 and 66 million people. Listen to his reaction when she tells him it's an original copy from the 1960s. Original print.
Oh no way!
It's a small one.
And it's the first version.
Really?
Is that a Bible?
That's a Little Red Book.
It is basically.
Yeah. Little Red Book?
The Little Red Book.
It's the Red Bible is what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some may say more important than the Bible.
Especially over here.
Yep.
Yeah, I know.
That guy, the one who goes, whoa. Yeah, he's the one picking your candidates. Hassan Piker, folks, this week confirmed became the most powerful person in the Democrat Party. He has selected every single Democrat socialist that's won, from Adam Hamawi. His first was Zohran Mamdani. Then he boosted Graham Plattner to fame, and most lately pushed Abdul El-Sayed over the line. If he campaigned, I'm not kidding, against Chuck Schumer in his district in New York or Hakeem Jeffries in his district in New York, they'd lose to whoever Zohran Mamdani picked. That guy is the one going nuts over Mao's Little Red Book. Insane thing number two. Last week, in a scene out of Bizarroville, Hakeem Jeffries, minority leader of the Democrats in the House, insisted, what are you talking about? Nobody wants open borders in the Democrat Party. We don't have candidates like that. Nobody wants to defund ICE. What are you talking about? Well, Bernie Sanders did the same thing this week.
There are some DSA candidates today, you know, including some who've won their primaries this cycle, who've also talked about abolishing prisons, defunding or even abolishing the police, abolishing borders. Are you worried that taking those positions, which are unpopular with most voters and even most Democrats, sort of hurt the movement that you've worked really hard to build?
Well, you know, look, no serious person that I know who is running for office believes in, quote unquote, defunding the police.
He went on to explain that no one he knows who's running right now wants to abolish prisons either. Yep, nope, not happening. Oh, and open borders. Psh, no Democrat wants that. Even though we literally watched it under Joe Biden.
The open borders, no. We all, most of us believe in comprehensive immigration reform, not opening up all the borders.
Folks, I could spend the next hour dragging you through all the audio clips to prove to you none of this is true, but you've heard them before. I won't waste your time. But what can we take away from this? Is he having a senior moment, completely confused? No. No, he can read polling. And somebody finally polled this week, Rasmussen. And it's quite frankly stunning how unpopular all these ideas are, even in the Democrat Party. Abolishing prisons, a staple of Democrat socialists and some who aren't even Democrat socialists. What percentage of Democrats agree with that? 25%. Not really popular, is it? How about this one? How about we end the Pentagon? That's right there on the Democrat Socialist of America platform, too. What percentage of Democrats think that'd be a good idea? Want to do that? 24%. How about open borders and giving amnesty to anyone already in the U.S. illegally? Just 37% of Democrats agree with that. Folks, these are likely voters. The only one that even gets to 50% is, and this is terrifying, ending the presidency and the Supreme Court. 50% of Democrat voters agree with that. Can you see why Bernie is tacking to the right here? It's not because he has a general election audience now that most of these primaries are over. It's because of Democrats. And so, folks, do not be surprised. They've been fanning out saying this stuff. So as Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries, when the liberal in your life, when you say, how can you support these people? They want to open borders. They want to defund ICE. They want to abolish prisons. They want to defund police. Do not be surprised when the liberal in your life looks you straight in the face and say none of it's true. Why? Never forget 1984. The party's most important command was always what? Ignore the evidence right before your eyes. And that command is being given right now. And they always fall in line like the sheeple that they are. Insane thing number one. Folks, when Donald Trump's number one most sycophantic follower and fan, Laura Loomer, tweets this, you know it's bad. Iran is mocking President Trump. Your daily reminder that Muslims are bad faith actors and they can't be negotiated with. She retweeted a tweet by Galibov mocking Trump. Quote, massive attack coming. Wait, never mind. They want to negotiate. That's theater diplomacy on a loop. And he called the whole thing fake news. Galibov is, by the way, the former head of the IRGC's Air Force. He retired after a long career killing people like our troops, and then settled in as the speaker of their parliament, where he personally put a $50 million bounty on Trump's head. So, you know, if you can get to Trump and assassinate him and then get out alive, thanks to Galibov, the Iranian government will, by law, pay you $50 million. Great guy. He's the one we're negotiating with. By the way, he's not a third-tier leader. He's been the head of the parliament and basically running the country for a very long time at the side of Pezeshkian. And between the two of them, they've been bombing our bases and killing our troops with the missiles that Trump said about 6 weeks ago that it was only fair that they had and that I said, dear God, they're going to kill our troops with. Oh, and the $6 billion that Donald Trump decided they could have in a very historic manner, because even Biden and Obama didn't dare to take the primary and secondary sanctions off Iran. Trump did. And they collected $6 billion from the sale of the oil. Well, because of the MOU put in place that Trump signed and J.D. Vance negotiated, it specifically said there were no restrictions on how they could spend the money. And I wonder if they did spend the money on the missiles that killed our troops. That's kind of how bad things are going in Iran, or were. It got worse this week. Because it appears they're reconstituting their nuclear program and they're not hiding it, because Trump refuses to kill the leadership or to let Israel do it. This, folks, should terrify you.
Today we heard the commander of the Revolutionary Guards, Vahidi, explicitly declare Iran's intention to continue developing nuclear weapons. To continue, as he said, well, as the Prime Minister of Israel, I am also determined to continue. To continue preventing Iran from possessing nuclear weapons.
Here's Benjamin Netanyahu.
Today we heard the commander of the Revolutionary Guards, Vahidi, explicitly declare Iran's intention to continue developing nuclear weapons. To continue, as he said, well, as the Prime Minister of Israel, I am also determined to continue. To continue preventing Iran from possessing nuclear weapons.
Please, Lord, and this is a prayer, please, let Israel protect us from these people. I've explained multiple times on this podcast, Israel is the secondary target of Iran. They hit them more because they're in the Middle East. They can get to them. We are the great Satan. We are the number one target of Iran. And we are running out of time. See, folks, almost no one in this country, because of the delusional way that the mainstream media and Fox News covers the Iran conflict, no one understands how much danger we're in right now. Here's why. The U.S. media always presents Iran nukes, nuclear enrichment, centrifuges on this long, stretched out timeline where Iran's got to have facilities and spinning centrifuges and uranium, and it's going to take a month, if not years, to reconstitute. Because guess what? The enriched uranium's under a bunch of rubble right now, might have even been destroyed. And that's all true. Yes, all of that is true under one of their paths to the nuke. The other two never get mentioned. And they're both easier. Understand the reason Iran built all that is because they wanted never-ending replenishment, the ability to build their own nukes and never be dependent on anyone else. Folks, someone could simply give them a nuke. Someone could also give them the nuclear fissile material that they need to load it onto the long-range nuclear conical missiles we know they have, because they changed world geopolitics forever. When they launched one of those long-range missiles, they weren't supposed to have a Diego Garcia. Now, because of this war, thank God, one of those was a dud. But the other one, we were properly positioned to shoot down. Never forget, in the nose of it was a 1.5 meter space for a nuke. Iran doesn't have to make its own missiles, although, you know, you wouldn't be blamed if you thought that watching Fox News or CNN. They could buy a nuke. Now, Trump has said anyone who sells them a nuke will be treated as if they bombed us, you know, themselves. Well, OK, the third route is the one that terrifies me more than anything. And it's this. Folks, and really there's almost four routes here. There's the centrifuges we know are back up and running at Pickaxe. We don't know the extent to which that facility is operating. So they could go that route, okay? But the other one I've been talking to you about for a long time, and it's the plutonium at Bashir's. Nobody ever talks about the plutonium. You know you can make a nuke out of plutonium too. Completely intact, unmolested plutonium is sitting in the pools right now. At Bashir. We didn't bomb Bashir. It's not under rubble. And folks, the only person to his credit ever to explain this to the American people on Fox News for some bizarre reason is Trey Gowdy. He went on the air and railed about this on his show and said, you know, it'd take like 6 weeks to make a bomb out of it. I hope that's not what they're doing with the money that Trump let them have and the fact that we lifted the blockade, so no doubt Chinese parts have come through there. So understand, when you just heard Vahidi and he's tweeting about, hey, there's going to be this huge, you know, catastrophic attack, they have the material, the ability to do it. But the American people are delusional. They think, well, they haven't gotten a bomb in the last 20 years. It'll be fine. We just take off and bring the gas prices down. Everything's fine. Folks, the delusion is terrifying. And I think Trump shares it. Again, there's only one way to begin to combat this. We have got to kill the leadership, not the figurehead religious leadership that we already did, not some mid-level people in the IRGC as we did last week. We hit a base. And I mean, like, folks, why does the IRGC still have a base with soldiers on it? Like, what? The poor Iranian people could be our boots on the ground, but we won't let them. We insist on protecting their leaders to the point, folks, where they're now in Trump's face threatening a nuclear program in a catastrophic attack. And by the way, Trace Gallagher uniquely understood the significance of that Vahidi statement this week that, yeah, an attack's coming. We're reconstituting our nuclear program.
That's the red line right there, Jacob.
Look, when you stop a war two-thirds of the way through and then spend the next 3 months capitulating while wrecking your country's economy, all to defer to the leadership of Iran, yeah, they think they can do whatever they want. And understand something, folks. This is not about munitions. This is not about maybe we have enough, maybe we don't. Because, folks, I'm here to tell you, even blowing up the power grid isn't going to stop these people. You have to kill the leadership. And then you have to keep killing the leadership until there's no one to run the nuclear program, no one to order the plutonium pulled out of the pools, until they're so scattered and scared they've gone three levels below the earth and are cowering, until there's nobody to coordinate using satellites with China the attacks on our bases. And folks, seriously, we've got to stop the funding too. And that means taking Karg Island. Until Trump's ready to do those things, every week that goes by without a catastrophic attack on us, I'm grateful for, whether it's a base being turned to ash, one of our destroyers destroyed. It's coming, folks. It is coming. They are telling us it is coming because they are so confident that for whatever reason, Trump will just capitulate. Why might that be? General Jack Keane finally said it out loud this week. He's a longtime friend of Trump's, but you can tell he's had it.
Number one is the mediators. It is well known in the Middle East region by our intelligence services, by all the players, that the Pakistanis and the Qataris are compromised because they favor Iran at the expense of the United States. This is historical. This is not new. And yet they're the mediators. So their influence here, I think, has played a part in misleading the United States in terms of Iran's real intentions. The second thing are our allies and partners, led by Saudi Arabia. Let us point out and remind the audience here that when we were going to open the Straits of Hormuz forcibly, Saudi denied us the use of our airbase and denied us the use of their airspace, and also told the president and discouraged him from doing it because they thought the operation would fail. Of course, they knew nothing about the details of that operation, nor are they qualified to make that kind of an assumption.
Have you noticed what General Jack Keane has noticed, but he's not telling you? Trump keeps deferring. Well, Pakistan said not to do it. Well, Qatar didn't want me to do it. Well, four times the Saudis said no. Yeah, so I guess, why is he listening to these people? Well, Trump has, for many years, way predating this, had hundreds of millions of dollars worth of business interests in Saudi Arabia directly tied to the crown prince. They're friends. What about the Trump family? Look up the name Omid Malik. He's a huge fan and protector of the Iranian leadership, has been since the early 2000s. Oh, by the way, he was a Democrat until 2019. He's a key player in the Trump administration now and a good friend of the Trump family. Why? Because Trump Jr. has business deals with him worth tens of millions of dollars. J.D. Vance does as well. In fact, in recent years, Trump Jr. has been cut in for a 1% share of a $3.5 billion investment interest. That's about $30 million. Jr. has two other deals with the guy as well, and he's often seen at the White House, which has really freaked people out online. Folks, but the one that scares me the most, honestly, is Jared Kushner. He's been at the negotiating table throughout the Middle East, going all the way back to the Abraham Accords. And he's got a long-running deal with the Qataris through his investment firm, Affinity Partners. This is a guy who really hasn't ever had a real job, but manages a $1.5 billion fund stacked full of Qatari and UAE money. Folks, I'm not saying the Trump family is doing anything corrupt here. I want to emphasize that most of these business deals, in fact, all of them predate the Iran conflict. OK, so it's not like they're getting business deals while they're sitting at the table. But who is sitting at the table should never be sitting at the table. In fact, Trump should completely recuse himself if he's going to negotiate it at all because of the business interests with the Saudis. And folks, when you look at how they've betrayed us, I mean, just this week, the Qatari government, the head of the Qatari government, put out a statement congratulating Hamas and hoping for their success in the future. That's not a neutral negotiator. Look at Pakistan, the other negotiator at the table. They helped hide the Iranian Air Force from us so that we couldn't destroy it. And of course, the Saudis, who talk out of both sides of their mouth, with whom Trump himself personally, he's put it in a trust, but it doesn't matter, has huge business interests. I really think that's where these malign influences are coming from. And by the way, you could also look up something called the 1789. It's 1789 Capital Value. J.D. Vance has been a big player in that. Again, way predating this by years. But still, that's more Omid Malik money. And I really think that's what's going on here. I think Trump is trying to find a way forward that does not affect his family's business interests, or they're just friends with these people. They've been friends with them for a long time. They have longstanding interest and they listen to them because of it. And that's got to end, folks. It's putting us in mortal danger. And that's why Keane brought that up this week. And he's not the only general to notice the problem. Here's General, retired Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg has too. And he tries to put it as politely as possible on Fox News. Why the Trump family, those around Trump, might be getting bad advice.
I would change out a negotiations team. You do not need real estate guys to be talking about negotiations during the middle of a war. And when you do bring a negotiations team back, it ought to be a real hardcore son of a bitch that is just sitting on the ground and can really do it well. And I don't think we have that right now.
Oh, we definitely don't have that right now. And it's putting all our troops, our bases, America, the world economy at risk. And it's got to end, folks. Trump was doing so great there for a while. I mean, he truly, it seems, was trying to do the right thing for the country, or he wouldn't have gone in at all. I just don't understand what happened after that first month, and it really needs to end. Finally, I'll end with this warning. This guy, this is Tamir Heyman, former chief of Israeli military intelligence. He's retired now, but he runs a think tank, talking about the fact, and it's what I've been telling you, we never took out the key parts of the leadership, and the nuclear program is still intact because of what still exists.
You recently wrote, quote, despite tactical achievements, the campaign's two main centers of gravity, the Iranian regime and the nuclear project, remain essentially unchanged. Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
The regime survived. And the regime now, under the leadership of Mujtaba Khamenei, after surviving the worst-case scenario possible, facing U.S. and Israel joint operation in order to topple it, basically, it's much more resilient and strong right now on the short period of time. The Iranian regime survived the worst-case scenario.
Look, folks, I don't believe Mujtaba Khamenei is alive, or if he is, that, you know, he is functioning. But again, the Khomeinis are just religious figureheads. The actual regime that survived was the president, the head of parliament, the foreign minister, and much of the leadership of the IRGC. It is intact. And like I've been saying, so is the nuclear program, at least aspects of it that could right now be put to making a nuke, most especially the plutonium and Pickaxe Mountain.
Secondly, the nuclear facility, the nuclear enrichment is almost intact. And combining those two elements together creates a very dangerous situation, an ultra-radical survival regime and the ability, the potential capabilities left over in Iran, that combination is dangerous.
Except now, Tamir Heyman says, they're far more motivated than they ever were to get a nuke now and to get it quickly and to launch some kind of catastrophic attack. Here he's talking about Mujtaba Khomeini. I think he's a cardboard myth. But the people around him are the same ones that were around his dad. And they are not. They're still alive and they're still running things. And they are really, really angry.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.